the 411. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Governor Jeb Bush established the Florida Center for Reading Research in January of 2002. The Learning Systems Institute and the College of Arts and Sciences jointly administer it at Florida State University. The mission of the Florida Center for Reading Research includes conducting basic research on reading, disseminating information about research, conducting applied research, and providing technical assistance to Florida schools and the State Department of Education. Recently, the Florida Center for Reading Research at Florida State University received a $38 million award to help improve children's success. Joining me, I'm honored to have, from FCRR, Jean Wonsek. Jean is an assistant professor. She's in reading intervention and special education at FSU.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. Bev Simpkins. Bev is a research associate. She is has been a reading coach and has had her hands really in the mix of things. Been involved at NIM School and some of the other local schools. Glad to have you.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Barbara Foreman. Barbara is the director and professor of education at the Florida Center for Reading Research at FSU.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I'm glad to have you. Glad we made it, given the status of the weather. What is the status of reading overall in the United States today? And I know that's a broad question, you know, that I'm putting on you.
Right.
But where do we sit? What's happening with reading? And the reason I say that, you know, we've got so many things that are impacting reading that are so different than when we were growing up. I don't think kids read like we had to read. I mean, we didn't have anything else to read. I love reading, you know. But today, you know, they can get on the web, and you know, it's not the same thing. So that's why I asked that question.
Right. I'll try to tackle that.
Okay.
But Bev and Jeannie can comment as well. There's a National Assessment of Educational Progress that's been charting reading across the United States, and the performance is actually pretty flat. It really hasn't gone down or gone up since they've been charting it for a long time. But I think flat isn't good enough because the kind of expectations, the knowledge explosion, what youngsters are expected to read, like it's no longer that you can just mess around in auto mechanics and fix a car. Now you've got to read a manual because everything's computer driven.
Mm-hmm.
So the demands of literacy have increased, and the global competition for jobs has made that demand even greater. So I think the concern we have is not that we've gotten worse in that sense of kids' skills. It's just those skills are no longer adequate for the global marketplace. And as you pointed out, it's all the digital age.
Mm-hmm.
But I would ask my colleagues here,
don't you
think that reading online has a lot of demands too?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the level of critical thinking needed for a multitude of jobs related to comprehending text and applying that in many mm-hmm. different positions is equally, if not more, important in this day and age. And some of what we've, you know, learned, as Barbara was mentioning, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, some of what we know about teaching children to read, the largest amount that we know is kind of at that beginning reading stage when you're first learning how to read. And in those areas, we have seen some increases across the years on the national assessments, which means that we have, you know, real potential with adolescents and teens as well to continue to make a difference, I think, in that area.
And I think as I look at, like, in the real world, in the
uh-huh.
classroom, that today, I think there's been a lot of emphasis on learning to read, and there's been great progress in that area. Mm-hmm. What I've observed is it's that transition of reading to learn
that starts occurring between elementary and middle school that it becomes more challenging. Mm-hmm. The text complexity becomes more challenging for students. So learning to read is one thing, but then reading to learn, where students are expected to learn content areas and more informational text, is where there's a larger challenge. But I think we're starting to, with Common Core State Standards, which is something that has just started being adopted in many of our states in the country, it's going to change that and provide a different way of teaching and more core standards that all students should strive for college and career readiness.
That's good to hear, because I know this is just an anecdotal report, but what I have observed, not with all of them, but with many students, is that they can engage in critical thinking, and they don't read to learn. So to hear you all saying that, that's, you know, it's encouraging, because I'm certainly not seeing it, you know, in the classroom at all. That it's, maybe they just aren't reading at all, but it doesn't seem like they're reading to learn. It doesn't seem like they're comprehending what they're reading. Maybe they just aren't reading.
Well, Jeannie, you found that. Jeannie has got a grant from the federal government, the Institute of Education Sciences. She's working with social studies teachers in middle and high school. And aren't you surprised by the lack of reading?
Yeah, the lack of text in some of the content areas. And much of that has occurred because students were struggling a bit and with some of those, as Beth pointed out, more complex texts. And so in many cases, teachers have adapted to find ways to do their primary focus, which is get the content of U.S. history or whatever the content area is, science, social studies, have adapted to get that content across either without text or by reading the text with the students. And so some of our project has been working on how we can infuse more text instruction in the content area as well. Of course, the primary focus still being the content areas. And using that text, which is part of the Common Core as well that Bev had mentioned, the new national standards, using that text as evidence for your critical thinking. Mm-hmm. And why do you have this particular answer or opinion or rationale about a particular question or event? And where is your evidence for that and thinking through that?
And another thing that I have observed is those who don't read can't write. Oh, is that just me? Oh, okay.
No, they are very related.
Like, is it just me? No. Why am I seeing this?
Very related.
Are they write like they text?
Mm-hmm. Well,
right. Okay.
Yeah, I think that happens. And Jeannie, you're doing something with writing in response to what they read.
Yeah, and we've just collected some of the data, so I don't have a lot of results related to that. But there's no question that they are related, and that the way in which, in many cases, the written aspect is actually more difficult. So. So what a student is thinking, there's no question that how they express that in language or what they're thinking in terms of how they comprehended reading is probably what's going to show up in terms of how they're thinking in their writing. But writing is even more complex. And so if you're at a fairly basic level in your comprehending or your critical thinking, your writing is probably going to be even lower than that in terms of communicating what you're trying to communicate, because there are many more structures to written expression than we use in our typical language.
Yeah, and I think there's been a lot of press lately on the FCAT writing, and they're now scoring grammar, capitalization, punctuation, spelling. And we have some researchers who aren't here with us, but like Dr. Young Soo Kim and some of Dr. Beth Phillips and Dr. Chris Lonigan, their grants are looking at the emerging literacy, including spelling. Mm-hmm. And spelling needs to be taught because English is not quite as regular as you'd hope. So you need to teach some of the spelling conventions.
But see, now they have spell check. So they don't see the need. But, I've had students say that. Well,
I know they say that. But you have to know a lot in order to have spell check actually be informative. You might spell a few letters and get about 15 words, and you have to choose which one.
That's true.
But actually, Bev mentioned the Common Core, and Bev's working on a project on formative assessment. and it's actually a subcontract to the Pearson Company. But this is going to arm teachers with information about the foundational reading skills. Do you want to explain a little bit how that works?
This year we've started with, we have a group of teachers throughout the state of Florida who have been recruited to be trained in formative assessment and Common Core State Standards and then write basically formative assessment tasks, which are not really tests or assessments, even though they really are. They're really lesson plans. They're basically what they would be doing with students in the classroom, but has an added dimension of rubrics, which is a way to say they aren't getting it, or they almost have it, or they have mastery level skills, or at the highest level, they're advanced. They can demonstrate that skill and teach it to others and generalize it and really use it and apply it. So we are working on developing this formative assessment task bank of for teachers in the state of Florida to use based on the Common Core State Standards, the new national standards. And we'll be moving into beyond the foundational skills, which are the basics for accessing reading and being able to comprehend what they read. It'll go kindergarten through eighth grade in that development.
Go right ahead.
Well, no, I just wanted to add, Bev is working on this formative work in Florida, and we have a national project with the Center on Instruction funded by the U.S. Department of Education that works on giving advice on literacy instruction, but the hot topic now is Common Core. Mm-hmm. So we're actually working with all the states, and some states are way ahead of the ball in working on the kind of curriculum and instruction around implementing the Common Core. Mm-hmm. So we've shared some of that with Florida to make sure Florida's up to date on that.
How do you all feel about a standardized curriculum? And when I say whether it's a reading, you know, that's also one of the kind of hot-button issues right now. Let's standardize, because what they're teaching in this place is not the same thing that they're teaching or the same skills that they're teaching, and so in another setting. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about that? I mean, just wondering, do you think that that is something that will be helpful as far as the children are concerned and students are concerned?
Well, I can tackle that first, and then I see Jeannie's ready to jump in, too. But
I have all these questions. I think I've got you all here now. I can ask you and find out.
You know,
exactly
at the lower grades, there are like three or four publishers now who publish the what are called basal reading programs, the core reading programs. And the research shows that on average, having those programs provides a level of consistency and a good level of standard of excellence. However, there's also huge variety or variability in the implementation. So people talk about a curriculum that's written on paper or it's in a box set of materials, but then they quickly also talk about the quality with which teachers implement that. And good teachers know that they need to supplement certain pieces of it because of the particular students in their classroom. So I'm not too worried that things will get really standardized. Mm-hmm. I know they hear the word Common Core and think it means a common curriculum.
Right.
It's really a set of standards that have high expectations. So I think it's going to raise the level of expectations, which is good, a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think more what worries me is what the Common Core assessments look like, because the standardized testing can narrow the curriculum quite a bit. And then you're just teaching to that test, not to the broader.
Which is something that we tend to fall into.
Yes.
Quite easily.
But Jeannie, do you want to say something about that?
Well, no, very similar. I mean, I think what you mentioned about standardized is where the Common Core came from in terms of similar standards across the states and high expectations and similarities in that sense. And if you move from one state to another, that those are very similar. But the curriculum itself is really not standardized in that sense, assuming that we don't just start teaching to specific narrow tests, but and the materials that teachers use, high quality materials, as Barbara said, are extremely important, and there are certainly choices within that meet the standards. But ultimately, it comes down to extremely knowledgeable teachers and expert teachers, really not regardless of the materials. They definitely need high quality materials, but you can put high quality materials in the hands of, you know, someone who's not a teacher and doesn't have that knowledge, and they won't be used well. So ultimately, we need teachers that are experts on these standards and mm-hmm. how to implement instruction for a variety of different levels, and particularly at the adolescent level, where the range of learning and the range of needs of students is only widens with each grade level.
But then it seems like we're in a catch-22, because the trend is to try to get rid of those teachers who have a lot of experience because they cost a lot. And so, well, and you're just telling me you need the teacher that's got the experience, right? I mean, I just want to make sure I'm following you. You need a teacher that's got the experience, but the system is saying get rid of the teacher that has the experience because I can get two for that one. Hold your thoughts. I see you want to respond. Hold your thoughts. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm having a great time today. Got the experts here giving me all the lowdown on reading. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I have Jean Wancic, Bev Simpkins, and Barbara Foreman, very knowledgeable in the area of reading, and that's what we're talking about today. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I had to interrupt you. I know you had some comments that when you wanted to say, but go right ahead.
Well, we were talking about under budgetary constraints, often an administrator might want to hire the cheapest teachers, meaning the less experienced, and the seasoned, experienced teachers might suffer from that.
Now, does your center provide assistance to parents, teachers, coaches, administrators, researchers, everybody like that, right? I mean, am I correct in thinking that?
Well, we're within Florida State University, and our mission is applied research, mm-hmm. and we're actually in state statute, Florida statute, to assist the state with everything related to reading, from instruction to assessment to actually advising them on a database called the Progress Monitoring Reporting Network.
Let's say I'm listening to this program, and I really want to get some more information about what we're talking about. I might be a parent. Might be an administrator. How do I access it?
Yeah.
How do I contact?
Our website, fcrr.org. Go to that website and you'll see information. We're actually adding a link explicitly for parents. There are a lot of instructional resources on this website. It's very popular around the country and actually around the English-speaking world because we developed something called Student Center Activities. And teachers can download these activities and use them, particularly in their student centers, while they might be working individually with groups. And Bev, you came from Leon County Schools, and I believe those student center activities and other resources on our website have been very popular.
Oh, absolutely, because they're free, you know, and they're available to all the teachers. And they give teachers those added activities that they can use in learning centers to support instruction in the skills of reading, teaching reading. And they're at the elementary level, and they're just outstanding. I know they're being used all over the country.
Well, and there's also instructional routines that are more the actual instruction that a teacher would be implementing as they're meeting with that small group or those individual students, while the center activities then can be more independent activities for review and practice that are also available on the website. And Barbara had mentioned the Center on Instruction, which is one of the projects that we have at FCRR. And they have a website, too. I'm sure we have a link to it on FCRR that has a lot of adolescent resources, too.
Right, centeronstruction.org.
Share with me what a reading assessment would involve. Now, I know it would probably vary according to chronological age, but I have a kid that has some reading issues. They need to be assessed. What does this reading assessment, what does a thorough reading assessment involve for the listening audience?
Sure. I mean, your first question is, does the child or student have normal language skills?
Okay.
Because language, reading is unpack, look, trying to decode or understand written language. So if they have language problems, they may need some help with that. And actually one of our grants, the Learning Disabilities Center grant that Dr. Rick Wagner heads up, focuses a lot on these early language and reading problems that often result in this term that people use called dyslexia, right? Which simply means you can't read. But an assessment then is to find out how good are your language skills. And if you're a beginning reader, have you mastered the alphabet? I mean, we have an alphabet, and there are a lot of skills you need to learn to know how the letters connect with the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like an easy thing. But for some kids, they really struggle with that. And not only just decoding the alphabet, but can you write it down, which is essentially spelling? And then if you can decode and encode, can you put that information into forming words and being able to read those words and encode or spell those words? If you can do that, you can move on to the sentence level. And when words get put together to form a sentence, it's all about the syntax or the grammar. Do they have problems there? So actually, we were asked back in 2007 to design an assessment for Florida. It's called the Florida Assessment for Instruction and Reading. And on our website, there are lots of there's a link to that, lots of information. And it's free. It's owned by the Florida Department of Education, and teachers throughout Florida have been using it. Dr. Lonergan in our center has designed a pre-K version of this, pre-K, okay. VPK, volunteer pre-K assessments. And then I and my former colleague, Dr. Joseph Torgerson, we designed the K-12 system. And so about 1.5 million students take this assessment 3 times a year, and there are actually letters to parents about the results on these assessments that the teachers can use in their conferences with parents. So I really describe the learning to read phase, but Jeannie, do you want to add anything about the adolescent assessments?
Well, I often defer to you on assessments, but so I know you'll jump in. But as students move through the grade levels, of course, we continue to monitor their word recognition and spelling related to that, because words get, as many teens tell me, the words get big as we get as they move through the grade levels. So we have a lot of words with additional syllables, and the spelling and reading of those continues to be important. But equally important is their vocabulary. What's the meaning in those words? I mean, just because you can read it doesn't mean you'll understand the text. And when we were talking about critical thinking before, the comprehension becomes about making inferences, becomes about connecting many, multiple ideas within a text and keeping track of all of those ideas as you go through in very complex texts, texts that are complex for adults as well, because obviously that's what we're trying to do, is prepare students for post secondary types of including careers reading. So the assessments have to tap into that so that we can monitor how students are working towards that.
Yeah, so the key for parents is if your child can't read, you want to know why. So you should try to meet with your teacher and get results of the assessment and find out what are the diagnostic results, you know.
Now
in what areas are they strong or weak?
Mm-hmm. Well, it can be done at every school, any school. How is that handled?
Yes, every school in Florida is actually participating, including the juvenile justice system and the lab schools. And yeah, and actually Florida Center for Reading Research houses a help center so that school people can call in for help. Mostly it's technical assistance because these are computer administered.
Mm-hmm.
For the little kids, the kids aren't on computer, but the teacher is entering their scores into a laptop computer, and the data goes right into this progress monitoring mm-hmm. reporting network. And then the teacher can immediately call up reports on how her class is doing. And she can – there are also these reports are in bar graphs or they're in charts,
mm-hmm.
something for everybody. And then you can aggregate that data. The principal, for example, could look and see how all the first grade classrooms are doing or how all the eighth grade classrooms are doing and use that for decision making about hiring really good, knowledgeable people like Bev Simpkins in Leon County to come in and work with a high school that was low performing. And Bev, you might say something
else. The first step, though, is all schools have reading coaches throughout the state of Florida.
Okay.
And so the reading coach actually is the one who manages this FAIR assessment, Florida Assessment and Instruction in Reading, and helps all the teachers understand and interpreting those reports when those mm-hmm. are generated on the students, because there are also individual reports. So the reading coach is that person that really supports all the teachers in the school. And, of course, my role was I was a reading coach at one time
mm-hmm.
In a middle school, but then also I was at the district level and would oversee and support the reading coaches throughout the district. So the FAIR assessment, when it came along, it was like the greatest thing that ever happened, because many times teachers, they do their own diagnostics. They'll do their own screenings and diagnostics and curriculum-based assessments. And then they had that end-of-the-year assessment called that, you know, FCAT, which they really could not use to inform instruction too well.
Right.
Gave them an idea. But the FAIR was the first assessment that truly gave teachers that diagnostic information and could provide them with that direction of where is the student needing mm-hmm. the most support or intervention. Mm-hmm. Is it vocabulary? Is it comprehension? Is it word analysis? You know, mm-hmm. where do we need to start? So Florida has been very supportive of having reading coaches funded in their schools, and research shows that makes a difference.
Well, we hear so much about strategies and techniques. Are there any that are particularly effective? I mean, we hear about phonics. How important is phonics? I mean, talk about that for a while, because parents are always asking those kinds of questions.
I think some of, when you're talking about students, adolescents in middle and high school, as we've talked about, things are a little bit more complex. And yes, phonics is very important. And many people, when they think of phonics, however, think of the beginning reading skills. Do you know the sounds of the letters? And can you apply that to read a word? But things are a little bit more complex in middle school and high school. And so we often talk about kind of high impact skills in some of our interventions with kids who are struggling with reading, and where can you get your biggest impact, which I think kind of relates to your question. And there's certainly a word level, as I talked about, having a strategy to one that does not include just skipping the word, to which is what most of the students tell me they do when they come to a word they don't know how to pronounce or say. Yeah. So having a strategy, there's not a one be all and end all strategy, but having one that, okay, how can I break this word apart? How can I figure out what this word is? Vocabulary, having teachers continue to build students' vocabulary and know meanings of many, many words. You know, sometimes we think about that as an elementary skill, and well, once they've got their language, you know, it's set, or they can use the dictionary or some sort of resource that way. But it is extremely important for adolescents as well. And in comprehension, there are many different things that students need to learn. But students who can identify the main idea, can summarize a text, make those connections across texts that I was referring to before. And another thing that I hear besides the – I skip the words – is that I understand if I read from point A to point B. You asked me to read pages 5 through 17. And because I finished, I therefore understand. And really helping the students think about active reading, that it's not just about a task and finishing that, but how can I make these connections? How can I even become interested in this? How can I make connections that make what I'm reading interesting even when it maybe essentially initially doesn't seem that way? But summarizing and being able to identify the really important areas, which are things then that help you remember it past today too, because you can't remember every single detail in the text. So those are some high impact areas. But
now I know you're in special education. What about the needs of the special ed child? I mean, what type of reading curriculum and instruction can one anticipate?
Well, there's no question that students who have reading disabilities into middle and high school continue to need intervention. And so what we see is most helpful to students is both strategies that they are learning to help them access text that occurs in their social studies or their science or their math classes, but that they, in addition to that, need a class period. In some schools, it's more than one class period, but time to have specific instruction that meets their needs and not just sort of throwing individual strategies at them. Oh, you can use this in your class, but some dedicated time that focuses on these high impact areas to allow them to accelerate their learning, which then much more so allows them to access from their other classes the knowledge that they're trying to gain, particularly when it comes to text. So what we see in interventions is that there's no question that early intervention in elementary is the easiest place to make a difference, but that you can make a difference with students who are still struggling in middle and high school and with targeted intervention that is specific to them in addition to their other classes that they receive. And so some schools do that through an additional period. So they have English language arts and a reading intervention, so they can get that intervention. And in some schools, they infuse the English language arts with that intervention. But the students often need a little bit smaller group. It allows the teacher to meet their needs specifically and a focus. There are many interventions and evidence-based interventions, materials available that allow teachers to focus on the highest impact skills that will allow the students to accelerate their learning. But they need that time to do that, and that's really important.
I would think the prognosis would, as far as intervention is concerned, would really be determined by when you intervened. Is that, I mean, is that?
Yeah, no question. You know,
earlier is better. There's no question.
It's always better, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then the largest gains, we definitely see the earlier the better. But we do see gains in adolescent interventions as well. And the more intensive it is, which sometimes means more time or a smaller group or very targeted instruction, the better the outcomes for the students. So it's when you're talking about middle or high school interventions, it's not something you can just do with your left hand and give them a little bit extra and you're going to see these big gains. It absolutely has to be very focused and targeted and planned for the students.
You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I'm having a very informative conversation with members of the faculty of Florida Center for Reading Research at Florida State University. Joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome again Barbara Foreman, Bev Simpkins, and Jean Wansett. Jean, I have one more question I wanted to ask you, particularly because I know you're in special ed. And I was wondering how you make a distinction between, or if you make a distinction, between learning disability versus the victim of poor instruction. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's an excellent question.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent question. I would say over the past 15, maybe 20 years, that has been some of the largest focus in our field, is to make sure that we don't see students being identified for special education or being identified even with a reading difficulty, let alone a disability, due to lack of instruction. And I think we've made great gains. There are still improvements to be made in many schools, but we've made great gains from even pre-K, but certainly kindergarten and up, to ensure that when a student is continuing to struggle, it is because they have had effective instruction but have different needs and perhaps a disability. And all of – it's certainly in the law, for one thing, but as well, all of the models that schools are implementing have as a part of that to – if you're concerned about a student, you need to look at the education that they've had so far and the instruction they've had. So in the case of reading, the reading instruction that they have had, and also make adaptations to that to see if the student responds to that much before you would ever identify a student with learning disability. Now, when a student is struggling very significantly at middle and high school, it becomes much more likely, when you're talking about 6 or 7 years of struggling with reading, it becomes much more likely that there are issues related to how they learn to read than necessarily the instruction. But we have to monitor that, and it has to be in place. And years ago, there's no question that we received many students in special education. And it's still an issue. It's still something we have to continue to work to improve. Many students who suddenly when they got into special education, they would make great gains, which made special education look good or that teacher look good. But that really the reason that they were there is because they hadn't had that instruction before, and had they wouldn't have had trouble.
That's why the response to intervention or response to instruction movement is what's, I think, a new policy on the block. Mm-hmm. And that's because it used to be that a student would have to wait till they accumulated enough failure before, an IQ test would be given to them to see if there was a discrepancy between achievement and IQ in order to place them into special ed.
Of course, that IQ test had some verbal stuff on it, and therefore, we could get into that,
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, no. Most people have found that IQ test really isn't necessary. Mm-hmm. If they're not performing well, let's get them help early on.
Right.
So now kindergarten, first, second grade teachers are really being trained to pay attention to as soon as they start falling behind, help them. Mm-hmm. Help them in regular ed first, and hopefully keep them out of special ed.
Right.
So this is a relatively new, important change.
And rather than IQ being a part of it, it is more so that they have had these early interventions. They have had this effective instruction. Teachers and teams of teachers have considered ways in which to change the instruction. And still the student demonstrates, even with the best of what we know about instruction, which, of course, we continue to try to learn more. But when they've had the best of what we know that is very responsive for most students, if they are still struggling, then that more so than IQ is an indication of a reading disability.
Well, you all are just a wealth of information. I'm so glad to have you. And I have all these questions. But I guess I need to talk about the $38 million grant. We've talked about everything else. Talk to me about that. Well, I mean, what's the goal of it? Tell us about that. And, my applaud to you for getting it. That's great.
So the goal is everything we've talked about, but writ large over 6 states. This is the Regional Educational Laboratory for the Southeast Region, and there are 10 regional labs. They're called RELs or RELs, mm-hmm. And they're part of the Institute of Education Science, which is the research arm of the U.S. Department of Ed. And this time around, this five-year period, the mission is to help states build capacity in using their longitudinal data systems. Okay. The federal government's poured a lot of money into these data systems, and they want them used. Florida is actually a leader in using their longitudinal data systems to inform decision making. So that's lucky in mm-hmm. a way. We don't have to do too much here. But we're working in North and South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, and Mississippi. Mm-hmm. So we have partners. We have the RMC Corporation, CEDL, a small business called Instructional Research Group. And together we can cover the whole area because CEDL in particular has the Comprehensive Center in the Southeast. Okay. Comprehensive centers do professional development, technical assistance. But our goal is really to build capacity in the data systems and also to conduct research. So, for example, in Florida, well, first of all, I went around and visited all the chief state school officers in these six states, and I said, what are your priorities? And they said, oh, boy, here's someone who can help us for free. So they listed their laundry list of priorities, and we are trying to help them address those priorities. So STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, mathematics is a priority in several states. So it's all about algebra readiness. How can we help kids be successful on end of algebra tests? So we back up and say, actually, the biggest problem they have is with math fractions. So we have a randomized controlled trial going on in Georgia and South Carolina and maybe Florida, they're interested too, in where you randomly assign teachers to different professional development around teaching fractions. Mm-hmm. One is lesson study. The other it may be something called Intel Math. I don't know that they've ultimately decided that, but want to find out what really works best and study the students' gains in achievement after these and the gains in teachers' knowledge mm-hmm. after the professional development. So math is an interest. Literacy is an interest. So Florida has a new adoption coming for the kindergarten through grade 5 materials for the English for English Language Arts Common Core. So the chancellor asks us to help be an expert review site, and then I'm going to do a randomized control trials on early reading interventions. Why early, not adolescent? Well, because with the change in FCAT cut scores, last year 72% of third graders passed. This year it's about 53%. Mm-hmm. So the enrollment in reading camp has exploded. So what can we do in kindergarten, first, second grade to prevent FCAT failures? You know, what kind of intervention can we do? So we will be studying those interventions. We've picked out two that have rigorous scientific research behind them, and we'll also use the business-as-usual kind mm-hmm. of intervention that mm-hmm. goes with these basal reading materials, and we'll study this in about 12 different schools in different districts in Florida.
So then how would this information really be utilized to improve success of the kids?
Well,
I guess that would be my question. You know, because we're always doing research and studies and, you know, but how are we going to use it?
Well, the district-level people really want to know, how do I do professional development? What's the best strategy?
Okay.
It's not necessarily a package program, mm-hmm. but what's the best strategy for teaching math fractions, for example, to make sure kids are successful mm-hmm. on algebra? Because they put a lot of money into professional development, and if you know what's likely to work better, you've made a better investment, not only in your teachers, but in your students' gains. Same thing with the interventions. You know, we get questions all the time from parents or teachers, what's the best early intervention?
Mm-hmm.
And we refer them to the What Works Clearinghouse that the Institute of Education Sciences has. But a lot of times there's not much on there for their particular topic area. So that's why we're proposing these new studies as part of a Southeast Regional Lab to answer these questions of what works. That's the main mm-hmm. question you get mm-hmm. from district LEAs, you know, local education agencies, or the State Department people. Mm-hmm. They want to know what works, what's the best, what's the cost-benefit ratio. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're working hard to answer that. Then the big other big hot question is charter schools and vouchers.
Yes.
So South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Florida are hot into this topic, mm-hmm. and they want to know what works best. Well, you know, that's a really tough question. I don't know. I mean, we could go on for hours about that, but the research really is very mixed on that. Why? Because you can't randomly assign students to a charter school or a traditional public. So you can't really answer it. So what you find out is there are special kinds of families that tend to want to drive their kid across town mm-hmm. to a charter school. Mm-hmm. And they're different. They're different from those that are in traditional schools. So you can't really disentangle all of that. And the voucher kind of problem is really difficult because, and it's one of the hottest issues now in the current presidential elections. It's difficult because, you know, Orange County actually tried this experiment. They said everybody can go to the school of their choice. So you had a number of families who really wanted to take their children out of a, you know, in Florida we grade schools,
right.
take them out of an F school to get them into an A school. Well, guess what? The A schools didn't have any openings. They said, sorry, we're all filled up. So there was a brand new school that was opening in a Popka. Does anyone? How do I? Mm-hmm. It's near the where NASA Center is.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, great, we'll take anybody. Well, that would have been a 2-hour busing for some kids and their families. So only about 40 students ended up going. So it sounds wonderful to say choice should be the major educational policy. We'll take your stipends that you get for Title I or IDEA, for special education, mm-hmm. and put it in your so-called backpack, and then you can go to any school you want. But the reality is the very high-performing schools are full. And what we need to do is figure out ways to improve instruction in the community and the neighborhood schools so you don't have to bus students all over for hours.
Okay. Oh, there's so many things I want to ask you. Let's talk. Can we talk a little bit about literacy programs?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And just for the listening audience, what are literacy programs? Who can attend them? How effective are they? You know, that kind of thing. Because I often get questions about literacy programs, you know, just what is available there, out there.
Could we talk maybe the example of Leon County, for example, extended day mm-hmm. or supplemental, mm-hmm. what do you call it? The SES, Supplemental Educational Services.
Mm-hmm.
Beth, can you say a little
bit
about that?
When you talk about literacy programs, as far as actual programs, you know, there are initiatives from the federal and the state government that funnel support, extra support to schools that have greater needs, whether they be that they've scored an F school mm-hmm. or schools that have lower socioeconomic income students. And those extra supports are really monitored also by the State Department of Education in Florida through something called differentiated accountability. And what they have found is if they provide extra support, extra literacy programs like the extended school day, mm-hmm. That's very helpful. However, the challenge with that is when you have a school that has this special need and they're going to be a longer school day, which is wonderful. You know, the students are going to be able mm-hmm. to have additional instruction. When you talk about middle and high schools that mm-hmm. are in that position and there's school choice or there's a way to not go to that school, because why should I go longer when I might be a better performing student in academically, then why would I want to go to that school?
Right.
It's almost like a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And the busing that is required to provide some students to stay longer and some not to stay longer is just unreasonable. It's just it's not feasible. So it's a real catch-22. So what I have seen is a trend, which I think is absolutely awesome, kind of goes supports what Jeannie was talking about, is content area literacy. That content area literacy just doesn't occur in a reading class or an English language arts class. We need science and social studies teachers. We need all content area teachers to have the tools to teach the student how to access this information. So this has been a trend, started about a year ago, that the State Department of Education provided something called Content Area Reading Professional Development, Next Generation, and they've provided sort of a turnaround model, professional development model for teachers in all content areas to receive pretty in-depth professional development on these strategies and routines to help students access the reading that they have, a more complex reading that they need to accomplish in the content areas. So literacy programs I'm seeing are becoming more infused in, you know, the whole school day and not just in English language arts.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And it's really important when you really take a step back to think about the text that an individual student sees throughout the day. They go to science and there's some text. They go to math and there's some text. They go to social studies. And they're very, very different. And if your instruction is occurring in English language arts, which has its own structure of text, and you're just expecting students to be able to take those skills and apply it to all different types of contents and text, there's many students who are going to fall behind with that, not surprisingly. And so that's one of the reasons that that this is showing so much promise. And but to truly infuse it is the key, and that's going to be – and connect it so it doesn't become about the student now having the problem of all these different things being taught in different class periods. So it will be a challenge, but it certainly has potential.
Well, we are out of time. I can't believe it. I mean, it's been great. I just want to, again, extend my sincere appreciation for you coming and sharing this information with the listening audience. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield, technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org.